From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the state of Texas is sued by the feds over SB 8, the vigilante abortion bill. And Governor Greg Abbott says he can eliminate rape in Texas. Why that statement is ridiculously ignorant. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Thursday, Attorney General Merrick Garland tried to block the Texas SB 8 anti-abortion law. The law took effect on September 1st and was signed by Governor Greg Abbott. This is the nation's most restrictive anti-abortion law. It bans the procedure as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy and allows private citizens to take legal action against anyone who helps a woman terminate her pregnancy. The Justice Department filed this suit on Thursday in Austin and asked the judge to protect the rights that Texas has violated by declaring the abortion law unconstitutional and issuing an injunction blocking its enforcement. At a news conference, Attorney General Merrick Garland said the ban is clearly unconstitutional under long-standing Supreme Court precedent.
Texas does not dispute that its statute violates Supreme Court precedent. Instead, the statute includes an unprecedented scheme to, in the Chief Justice's words, quote, insulate the state from responsibility, close quote. It does not rely on the state's executive branch to enforce the law, as is the norm in Texas and everywhere else. Rather, the statute deputizes all private citizens, without any showing of personal connection or injury, to serve as bounty hunters, authorized to recover at least $10,000 per claim from individuals who facilitate a woman's exercise of her constitutional rights. The obvious and expressly acknowledged intention of this statutory scheme is to prevent women from exercising their constitutional rights by thwarting judicial review for as long as possible.
For more on SB 8 and the challenge to it by the Justice Department and what this means for reproductive rights, I spoke with Washington Post legal affairs reporter Anne Marimo.
This is a powerful, ambitious lawsuit by the Justice Department. And we have seen DOJ intervene in other state matters. And it was a powerful statement by the Justice Department to say that states cannot deprive individuals of their constitutional rights, and they weren't going to stand by, and they're going to try to step in here.
Earlier in the week, the Justice Department put out statements saying that they were going to challenge Texas and ensure the rights of people in Texas seeking an abortion day. And then there was criticism from people on the Hill, and you reported that people were saying this is more bark than bite.
Yes.
So did we get some bite?
Right. So earlier in the week, the Justice Department basically said we're going to enforce existing laws. They did say they were still exploring other options. Look, this is a different kind of law that Texas passed. It's specifically designed to withstand some preemptive legal challenges to block it. So I imagine it took some time for DOJ to figure out the best approach here. But yes, they did get some pushback. Democrats on the Hill were saying this is a first step, but we need to see more in a situation where the rights of women are being deprived.
So the issue of the word vigilante, bounty hunters, these are being thrown around. SB 8 empowers individuals, pretty much anyone in Texas, to turn someone in who got an abortion or anyone who was going to help them get that abortion after about 6 weeks. That is the new wrinkle in this longstanding battle.
Right. So about a dozen other states have passed similar bans that prohibit abortion after that 6 week window. But in those cases, it was state government officials charged with enforcing the law. Texas specifically designed this law to sort of empower, as you say, private citizens to file the civil lawsuits. And that made it difficult for lawyers for abortion providers to go to court and try to block the measure in advance. All of those other state laws have been blocked by federal judges before they could take effect. here, what the Supreme Court said is essentially there's no one to sue yet because none of these lawsuits have been filed. So procedurally, we can't step in and block enforcement until there is one of those lawsuits filed.
And if you file a lawsuit saying that person, I know you got an abortion and you broke the law and I'm suing you, if I make a false accusation, I can't be sued back. I don't have to pay any sort of fine or fee or face repercussions for that. And if I can earn up to $10,000 if I'm able to prove my case in civil court, that's a lot of motivation for people to make these accusations and become these vigilante abortion hunters.
Well, I should clarify, the law does not allow people to sue women, actually, who get the abortion. So it's supposed to be the people who would help the women, aiders and abettors. So someone, the provider, a clinic worker, someone who gives a woman money to get the abortion or drives her to a clinic. Yes, anyone, even outside of Texas, can come into Texas and go to court with the promise of getting at least $10,000 for each abortion. I would say that the law is already having its intended effect even without these lawsuits, because abortion providers are not performing abortions on the women who come in who are after 6 weeks. And opponents of abortion would say that they don't need to file the lawsuits. But again, the law is already having the impact that they hoped that it would.
And is that why the U.S. Supreme Court did not step in?
Right. So the Supreme Court did raise, it was a 5-4 decision. The conservative majority did say the lawsuit had raised serious questions about the constitutionality of Texas's law, but they said procedurally they could not step in at this point to block enforcement. They said lawyers for abortion providers could come back once a lawsuit was filed against them, and then they could challenge the constitutionality there. And that's why I think you see the federal government coming in and saying state laws cannot deprive individuals of their constitutional rights, and that federal law preempts state law.
But as you say, abortion providers like Planned Parenthood South Texas, right now they're out of the business of doing that because of this new law, SB 8. And there are people who are calling for immediate relief in Texas, like today, to deal with this. And is that going to happen? I mean, this action by the Justice Department in federal court in Austin, is that something that would happen immediately, or is that going to be the slow grind of our justice?
Right. So even when courts agree to hear something on an emergency basis, they move slowly. So the case has been assigned to Judge Pittman in Texas, who was already presiding over the previous challenge that went to the Supreme Court. The state of Texas will get a chance to respond. I imagine he'll want to hold a hearing on such a high-profile case that will almost certainly get appealed to the conservative Fifth Circuit and then may very well end up back at the Supreme Court. So that does take time, and you could see, you know, weeks or a few, several months where the law remains in effect.
For someone who is trying to figure out what to do about their own reproductive freedom in Texas, that's not an option.
Right. So the abortion providers are already sending women across state lines to clinics in other states. There are, you know, abortion funds that can help women with childcare and transportation and taking time off work. But yes, as you say, that makes it much more logistically challenging for women in Texas who do want to end their pregnancies.
Now, there are Democrats who are calling for the Justice Department to even become adopt even a more aggressive posture, and they want the AG to prosecute these vigilantes. Is that something that Merrick Garland talked about, or something that they might be willing to go into?
So that approach would, again, require someone to actually file one of these lawsuits and for a provider to perform an abortion after that six-week period. As you know, Merrick Garland is a former judge on the D.C. Circuit, known as being very deliberative and cautious. And so I think this approach he's taking is much more in keeping with his style than to criminally prosecute one of the people who files a lawsuit.
Ann Marimo is a legal affairs reporter for The Washington Post. On Tuesday, as Governor Greg Abbott signed the controversial voting restriction bill, he was asked about the lack of a rape exception in the SB 8 abortion law.
Why force a rape or incest victim to carry a pregnancy to term?
It doesn't require that at all, because obviously it provides at least 6 weeks for a person to be able to get an abortion. And so for one, it doesn't provide that. That said, however, let's make something very clear. Rape is a crime, and Texas will work tirelessly to make sure that we eliminate all rapists from the streets of Texas by aggressively going out and arresting them and prosecuting them and getting them off the streets. So goal number one in the state of Texas is to eliminate rape, so that no woman, no person, will be a victim of rape.
Abbott's comments about eliminating rape from the streets stunned many who work to support survivors of sexual violence. Not only did these remarks sound tone-deaf, but they demonstrated a fundamental lack of understanding about sexual assault, how common it is in Texas, and the lack of options that typically exist for a person who has been impregnated during a rape. Juliana Gonzalez is the Senior Director of Sexual Assault and Health Services at SAFE, Stop Abuse for Everyone.
Rape isn't something that's so easy to dismiss. Texas does have a very serious problem with sexual assault. But in our experience, and according to the data, both nationally and in the state of Texas, most sexual assaults are perpetuated by somebody known to the survivor. So the perpetrator of sexual assault is likely to be a friend, an acquaintance, a spouse, a family member, a dating relationship, someone that the survivor knows. The idea of a rapist being sort of a dark figure in the alley or a dark figure on the streets and the bushes, that's a myth. So it absolutely does happen. Stranger rape does happen. But in most cases of sexual assault, in both our experience and in the national and state data, sexual assault is something that occurs between people who know each other and who are in relationship.
So when Governor Abbott says the comment that they don't have an exception for rape or incest in this SB 8 bill, and he says because we can eliminate rape from the streets of Texas, that says a lot. It doesn't actually address the real issue of why this is an inadequate response, but it does tell you a lot about maybe some of the framework that went into crafting this law.
Sexual assault is not a problem that we can arrest our way out of, right? It's certainly important that criminal justice systems work with survivors to make sure that the people who commit sexual assaults are see justice. But it's the vast majority of sexual assaults are not reported to police departments or prosecuted. In Texas, one of the studies that we reference often, 92% of survivors don't report their sexual assault to the police. So sexual assault is not something that we can end with arrest or with prosecution. It's a much more complex issue, and it's much more widespread than that would indicate.
Not having an exception for rape in the SB 8 abortion law, is that a concern for SAFE?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, at the heart of sexual assault is loss of power and control, loss of bodily autonomy, right? And so survivors are going to need comprehensive services to heal from that. And it's not just sexual assault either. Relationships where there are domestic violence or situations where there's human trafficking, child abuse, other issues that we work with, these are also relationships where power and control are a pretty significant issue. We frequently see sexual coercion in domestic violence relationships where the survivor has lost autonomy, experiences sexual violence within the context of their relationship. We also see reproductive coercion sometimes in domestic violence situations. So the abuser takes away the survivor's access to make decisions about birth control or reproductive health care or to access health care. And we also see economic abuse often in these relationships. So the abuser will cut off a survivor's access to financial resources or other resources that they need to take care of themselves or their kids. And so, you know, I think the loss of bodily autonomy, the exertion of power and control, these are hallmarks of the abuse we see, including sexual assault. It's our view that survivors are going to need dignity and privacy. They're going to need bodily autonomy restored, and they're going to need a full spectrum of supportive services to heal from sexual assault or abuse.
Some of the phrases that you used just now, loss of body autonomy and control. This is about power and control, loss of reproductive consent. People are using these same phrases to talk about SB 8 overall, this anti-abortion law. Women are losing their control over their own bodies, control over their own reproductive freedom. The argument has been made that Greg Abbott's comments about we can eliminate rapists from the streets and his arguments in favor of limiting reproductive freedom in Texas, this is basically, you have a Venn diagram. There's a lot of overlap in this thinking.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we, from our experience working with survivors, we know that acts of violent coercive control, like sexual assault or like incest, they take so much from a person, right? Including any agency that person felt over their body. And so it's important for us to see that agency restored for people in the process of healing after a sexual assault. And I would imagine that SB 8 would feel like another attack on survivors who have already lost bodily autonomy. It's our hope that in moving past something like a sexual assault or domestic violence situation, that survivors are afforded dignity and privacy, that they're able to restore their bodily autonomy, and that they're not further traumatized by attacks on their own ability to control themselves and their life.
Governor Greg Abbott also said that these survivors of sexual assault who could be impregnated by their attacker would have up to 6 weeks to remedy that. Is that an adequate response?
I don't know that that's entirely accurate. So generally speaking, I think many have been outspoken in making us aware that a pregnancy that measures at 6 weeks through an ultrasound is about 2 weeks after a person would expect a normal menstrual period. And many people don't experience normal menstrual periods for a variety of reasons, right? The first thing that comes to mind for me is I don't think any of us have an interest in rushing the decision to have an abortion. So even for folks who identify a pregnancy very early, I think it's in our best interest to make sure that they have enough time to make that decision thoughtfully and privately in consultation with their doctor or their clergy person or their family. Additionally, I think survivors of sexual assault or domestic violence may be experiencing an extra layer of challenge during that time period. That may make it hard to make a decision quickly. 94% of women who are sexually assaulted experience symptoms of PTSD, of post-traumatic stress disorder, during the 2 weeks after their sexual assault. We often see survivors have a very strong PTSD response. 94% of women who are sexually assaulted experience symptoms of PTSD during the 2 weeks after the sexual assault, or they experience dissociation. And both PTSD and dissociation can decrease the ability to make decisions quickly, right?
One of the top symptoms of dissociation is memory loss.
Right. PTSD can decrease cognitive function. Dissociation can lead to a detachment from the real situation in one's life, including the realization that you're pregnant in some cases. And so PTSD and dissociation can cause survivors not to seek care, whether that's mental health care or physical care, reproductive care, for many weeks, right? At SAFE, we see survivors for counseling, and our counselors tell us that they can often see survivors for up to 8 sessions of therapy before they even are told by the survivor about a sexual assault. For those reasons, it's particularly challenging for survivors of sexual assault or other intimate partner violence to make a decision about an abortion quickly, or even to become aware that they're pregnant in time to seek abortion services in Texas right now.
Also, I'm reading that some victims of rape or incest are young and may not have a full understanding or familiarity with their menstrual cycles to be able to quickly identify a pregnancy. Also, these victims are under the control of someone who may be their attacker. It'd be very difficult for them to find support.
That's right. Yeah. Victims of child sexual abuse are even more challenged to identify a pregnancy early and to make a decision about that unintended pregnancy, especially if it's as a result of a sexual assault or of incest. 93% of perpetrators of child sexual abuse are people who the survivor, the victim knows. And so often those folks are people who have incredible control over their life and may prevent them from seeking the care that they need, whatever that is. Additionally, child survivors of sexual abuse often do not have regular menstrual periods yet. Sometimes the circumstances of their life make their periods even more irregular. Sometimes they're just so young that their periods have not stabilized yet. And adolescents don't tend to be extraordinarily familiar with their own menstrual cycles and biological rhythms, which makes it difficult to identify whether they are pregnant. So giving these survivors 6 weeks from the beginning of their last menstrual cycle does not allow for most survivors of sexual assault, but especially survivors of child sexual abuse, to know that they've become pregnant and to make a decision and then to access care.
According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, in 2019, the last year that we have numbers for, 14,656 rapes reported in Texas. That's reported. We only know that, a small percentage are reported. That is the highest number in the entire nation of all the states. And there are states that are more populated than Texas. So Texas has the highest number of rapes reported. Now, among those, about 2,200 people were arrested for rape that year. So if Governor Greg Abbott says that he has the capacity to eliminate rape from Texas, it seems like they haven't really been doing that.
These are incredible numbers. And I would say comparing state to state numbers can be kind of tricky with sexual assault because of definitions and the way they're coded with law enforcement. But still, that's very striking. No matter where you go, prosecution rates are very low for sexual violence. Reporting rates are very low for sexual assault. We know that just above 9% of sexual assault survivors in Texas tell law enforortment that they've been assaulted. And in the United States, only about 13 out of every 1,000 or so instances of sexual assault are referred to a prosecutor. Prosecuting sexual assaults is very challenging, and sexual assault cases are very demanding and challenging for sexual assault survivors who are often called upon to testify. That can be very re-traumatizing for the survivor. So I would say across the board, sexual assault is not a problem that can be solved strictly through arrest or prosecution. We're going to have to make prevention part of the solution. We're going to have to do education. We're going to have to find comprehensive services that allow for healing and recovery for survivors after an assault or after a domestic violence situation. And we're going to need to change the culture around sexual violence. We're going to need to really see a paradigm shift in how people understand bodily autonomy and personal freedom.
So when Greg Abbott says we can eliminate rape, okay, that on its face is clearly an absolutely a ridiculous statement. There's no truth there at all. But we have seen in our polarized political society that it's not about the quality of the lie, it's just putting something forward. It's like when Donald Trump was talking about his habits of sexual assault, and they just say, well, it was locker room talk. You know, it's not about the quality of his lie, it's just that you put it forward and your supporters are going to just go with that. So how do we make sense of this world where we have a governor of Texas, he is demanding laws, crafting laws, signing laws that regulate the bodies of people in Texas who are pregnant, can get pregnant. And he seems not only not to have an awareness of how these bodies work, but he doesn't really seem to be that bothered. And he just puts forth these totally transparent statements that you could just chalk up to as him not really caring.
I don't know what to say about that. I mean, when it comes to sexual assault, I do think prosecution is part of the solution. What the governor is alluding to is that it is important to investigate and prosecute sexual assault. However, there's a much broader context for this issue. We are not going to end sexual assault by arresting it away. This is not a problem that we can prosecute an end to. And so, you know, to my mind, prevention is part of the solution. Education, early education in schools about sexual health and bodily autonomy is a solution. Conversations about consent are part of the solution. We have to change people's minds about what's acceptable and what's a violation. We need to change entitlement to sex. We need to make clear what a sexual assault is and how that's defined. Eliminating sexual assault may involve prosecution and arrest. I hope it does. But it's also going to involve education, and it's going to involve a real paradigm shift in our attitudes about sexual violence and also about bodily control.
Juliana Gonzalez is the Senior Director of Sexual Assault and Health Services at SAFE. Stop abuse for everyone. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.